Please note that the following content is not intended to be legal counsel or to provide holistic training for biblical counseling or ministerial care. The episode brings understanding on the issues connected to biblical counseling and gives practical wisdom by which leaders can navigate complex situations. The information provided about services and resources does not constitute endorsement or recommendation by NAM. Being a ministry wife is a vocation without a job description. And let's be honest, sometimes it seems like ministry might be easier if we did have one. If you are a ministry wife like me and are looking for hope, perspective, and a little bit of practical advice regarding your role, you're in the right place. I'm Christine Hoover. Welcome to the Ministry Wives Podcast, a production of the North American Mission Board. Join me as we hear from women from various ministry contexts having authentic conversations about our shared joys and challenges, even the ones we're unsure we can talk about out loud. No topic is off limits. Today, my guest is Kristen Kellen. Kristen is an associate professor of biblical counseling at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. She regularly counsels teens and their families and is the author or co-author of several books, including Counseling Women, The Gospel for Disordered Lives, and The Whole Woman. She is married to her husband, Josh, and they have 4 children. Kristen joins me today for a how-to episode, how to counsel other women. As pastors' wives, we often find ourselves in situations and conversations where women are looking for our counsel. How do we do that well? Kristen answers questions and gives us basic tools for counseling women. Here, friends, is my conversation with Kristen Kellen. Well, hey, Kristen, I'm so excited to welcome you to Ministry Wives. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to chat today.
Well, I'm especially excited about this conversation. I've been wanting to talk to somebody for many years on my podcast, somebody who's a counselor who can help us as ministry wives think about how we can interact with other women, how we can talk to them when they bring things to us. And so I cannot wait to pick your brain. But first, I want you to just introduce yourself and tell us about what you do.
Sure. So my name is Kristen Kellen. I'm an associate professor of biblical counseling at Southeastern Seminary. So I get the joy and pleasure of teaching students how to be better counselors, how to do counseling in a way that's honoring to the Lord, but is competent as well. And by virtue of doing that, I get to counsel lots of folks as well. So I tend to counsel women or teenagers and their families is kind of my normal group of folks that I counsel.
Your specialty. Do you have any sort of special topics that you really enjoy talking with people about?
I love sitting with teenagers and helping them wrestle with kind of those middle high school years that none of us want to go back to, if we're honest. But just sitting with them and walking through some life's basic struggles that we all deal with, I really enjoy that.
That's awesome. I think I just want to start with the conversation with not necessarily counseling other women, but thinking about ourselves as ministry wives, how we can counseling ourselves might not be the term that I would use, but being self-aware, being emotionally and relationally intelligent. And I do think that that kind of overlaps with some counseling skills, some listening, some thinking skills. And so I would love to first ask you, what are ways that we as ministry wives can be growing in areas of self-awareness and relational skills?
That's a great question. And I think it's wonderful to even be asking that question because that shows a level of self-awareness, right? If we're asking, how do I be more self-aware? I'm of the mind, especially as a counselor, that practice makes progress. Might not be perfect, but it makes progress. And so asking ourselves questions about what am I conveying to this person that I'm talking to? What are my words conveying? What is my facial expression conveying? What am I communicating to this person? And kind of similar to that is, what is their response to me telling me about what I'm conveying, right? Now, there's some layers there we could parse out, but just asking basic questions about, what am I communicating to this person sitting across from me? How are they receiving that? And just being Well, self-aware. And yeah, as I say that, I think about self-awareness is different from self-absorption, if I can use that phrase, that it's good to be self-aware and to be mindful of what we communicate to other people and grow in maturity in those ways. But we don't want to be so self-focused that all we're doing is thinking about ourselves in every conversation.
Right.
There's a level of self-awareness that would come in there, but we don't want to be so focused on ourselves that it's detracting from that relationship, because that's not helpful in any sense either.
So what would you say are some basic things that we want to be thinking about and put into practice, almost where it becomes, we don't have to think about it, but the way that we interact with someone, or we are listening, or we are present with someone, what are some things that you would want us to consider?
Yeah, a couple of them come to mind. First is, am I attending to this person? So, you know, we all, especially as women, we have 1,000 plates spinning all the time. And sometimes it's easier to be present with someone, but not actually be present with them.
Yeah,
thinking about other things, or thinking about our grocery list, or that sort of thing. And that other person we're with, they can see that. They can see if we're listening or not. So one skill is just being mindful to be present, to be with them. When we're with them, we're with them. And our minds aren't going 100 different places. Kind of tied to that, and this might seem like a funny one, but as a counselor, I'm very, very focused on this. What is my face and my facial expressions conveying to a person?
Right.
Right? Because some of us hold that really well. Some of us don't. And so what is my facial expression conveying to this person that I'm trying to be present with? Are they seeing appropriate facial responses? Are they seeing proper emotion? Are they seeing me space out in contrast, right? So facial expressions, but being present, I think are two really easy, basic ones that all of us can be mindful of.
Okay. And do you have any tools or tips of how we can grow in these things, just being emotionally and relationally intelligent?
Yeah, I think some intentionality, again, around making progress in these areas. As we do that more, it will become more natural, right? So as I am in conversation and I'm thinking about, okay, what am I conveying? What's my face conveying? Am I present? The more we do that, the easier it becomes.
Yeah.
So we don't have to be as hyper-focused on what am I conveying? What is my face conveying? Am I present? Because those things will just become natural in us.
Mm-hmm. And it also makes me think about, for us as pastor's wives, how we engage people on Sunday mornings or church-related activities, just thinking about are we conveying a warmth and an openness, or are we conveying that we are closed off, maybe by having our arms crossed, or maybe by our facial expression, or sitting by ourselves in the corner, or whatever it is, that we always want to be considering presenting ourselves as warm and open, and not in a rote sort of way, but in a real, genuine being engaged and present. I think it goes along with what you said about being present, that as I go into church on Sundays or whatever it is church related, that I'm prepared and I am ready to be present with people. And that automatically is going to come out in my body language and the way that I relate to people.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And I think one word that you said there stands out to me is being genuine, because I don't know about you on a Sunday morning, Christine, but I've got 4 littles. And so if I'm trying to be present with somebody, I've got people tugging at me constantly. Mommy, mommy, I need this. But even in the midst of being pulled on, right, we can still be genuine and genuinely present, even if we're attending to multiple things at the same time. People can receive that genuineness when they see that we're engaged with them and we're not distracted. Even when there are legitimate distractions there with us, probably for most of our listeners, I'm guessing there's some kiddos probably pulling at them pretty regularly.
Yeah. Kristen, well, when I became a pastor's wife, one of the first things that I discovered is that just because of the role that I carried, or this title that I carried, pastor's wife, that other women automatically assumed that I would be the person to come to for counsel. And I was so young. I mean, I was 20-something. I actually got a counseling degree. So I did have some background in this, but I was overwhelmed by people are looking to me to know what to do, to know what to say. And I didn't know always what to do or what to say. And so I think everyone listening, they experience this sort of, oh no, what do I do? And so I would love for you to speak to that of what would you say as a counselor, what are some good basic principles that we want to have in relation to counseling other women as we engage these types of relationships and conversations in our churches?
It's a fantastic question. Probably your hearers are thinking, yes, please tell us. I think giving ourselves grace to know that we don't always have to have the right words. And what I mean by that is I think about often, do you remember in the book of Job at the very beginning, when yes. Job was facing this tremendous crisis, right? All of these horrible things had happened and his friends show up. And we oftentimes think about the not so wise words that they say later yeah. on that take up the bulk of the book. But what they do first is really wise and really helpful. And I think applicable here. They just come and they just sit and they're silent. They don't offer up the words. It's when they open their mouths that things go badly, right? But sometimes just coming and sitting and listening can have a tremendous effect on somebody. So I started this by saying, give yourself the grace to not necessarily have to have the words, because it may be just that this woman needs to sit and process and think out loud and have someone who sees her and who hears her and who hugs her at the end of the conversation, yeah. right? We all want to be seen and known. And that's ultimately the beauty of the gospel, that God sees us and knows us and loves us in response to knowing the depths of our sin. But we can take a lesson from that we just have to sit and listen. But then kind of part two, I think our natural response, our natural question rather we should ask ourselves then is, how does God's word speak to this struggle? Now, in some instances, like an anxiety, right? The scriptures have a lot of pretty specific, explicit teachings for anxiety. Lots and lots of things can come to mind there. But sometimes it's just a general word or principle from scripture that is a source of comfort, right? So the Lord is near to the brokenhearted. That is of tremendous comfort in a multitude of situations. Now, it doesn't mean that we're giving words to fix the problem necessarily or to help them not be brokenhearted. But what we're doing is we're bringing God's word and God's comfort to say, I hear you, I see you, and God hears you and God sees you. That's so simple and yet so profound. We don't have to have some 10-step method to fix people's problems. Oftentimes, 90% of the issue can be met just by sitting and by listening and being present and bringing some source of comfort from scripture that is a reminder of who God is in the midst of those struggles. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I would contend that 90% of struggles can be addressed pretty well with just those basic things.
Mm-hmm. I like that you pointed out bringing the truth of who God is. I think our first, maybe it's just me, but I think our first response is, or our first, what we want to say is what to do. You know, do not be anxious about anything, right. Which is true. The Bible is true, and that is a true command that we want to follow. But bringing the truth of who God is will a natural outflow of knowing that He is with us, that He is in control, that He is good, is going to be okay. I don't have to be anxious about anything. So I like that you pointed that out, that that's the comfort, is who God is, not here's a step that you should do. And I also am wondering, so you mentioned they come, we listen, and then you bring truth of who God is. And I know a lot of listening is asking good questions to help draw out what they're thinking and feeling. And for us to even understand what they're thinking and feeling before we offer any counsel or truth. So could you give us some good basic questions that we can use, that we can put in our tool belt and pull out when someone is sharing something with us. Say it's suffering, they're in a time of suffering, they're feeling a lot of things. What are some things that we can ask?
Yeah, I think a couple of things come to mind. I'm thinking out loud kind of in response to this. One is, what are some of the recurrent messages that are playing over and over in your mind, right? Mm. So when someone is suffering, how are they self-speaking, if I can use that phrase, in the midst of their suffering? What are they telling themselves about their suffering? What are they telling themselves about God? Because that's going to reveal what's in their heart, right? Our thoughts are reflective of the desires and motivations in our heart. So by asking those questions, we can get at some of that. I think another question that isn't one we often bring to mind, but we think of emotions oftentimes as intangible thoughts or feelings, but it does something as well to our bodies. Hmm. And so maybe asking the question, what do you feel in your body? Like when you are anxious, are you tensing your muscles up? Is that fight or flight activated? What are you feeling in your body? And how can we counter some of that? Not that we only address the physical symptoms, but I think sometimes as Christians and as Christian counselors, even we want to over-spiritualize or over-focus on the mind or the soul. And we forget that we're embodied as well. And our bodies play a role in things like anxiety or depression or suffering or grief. Fill in the blank, right? And so attending to both aspects of that. I think another, just the counselor in me coming out, one question I might ask, we call it the miracle question, but if you could snap your fingers and just one thing change that you think would have the greatest impact on fixing this problem, what would that one thing be? Now, that doesn't mean that we can fix it, but that in part reveals, what do they think is the solution for this issue? Do they think that it will only be fixed by God taking away the problem? Do they think that it will only be fixed if they never feel this way again? But what's in the heart of what they think the reason is for this struggle and how it's to be fixed? Those sorts of questions can spark lots of conversation. Mm-hmm. And follow-up questions that would be appropriate to whatever their response is.
That's really good. So it seems like what you're saying is sometimes the questions we ask, it's not just to gather information, but it's a question that helps the person who's speaking to know what's really in their hearts and to know what they're really thinking. We're helping them give words to what's going on, and almost like, and I know this has happened for me sometimes when people ask those kinds of questions, it is a light bulb for me when I answer.
Right. I'll say, Christine, I'll add to that. One of my favorite phrases when I'm counseling is help me understand. And drawing from what James teaches us about being quick to listen and slow to speak, I want to understand as best as possible before I even open my mouth to give any sort of counsel or response. Because if I don't understand it, I'm not going to speak appropriately. So that phrase, help me understand, fill in the blank, is probably my most used phrase in my counseling room.
Mm-hmm. That's really good. That's really good. I'd like to talk more about the pressures that we feel when someone is suffering. I know for me, the moments when someone in our church, maybe a tragedy happens, a crisis, that's really scary for me because I want to enter in, but at the same time, I don't, because I know it's going to be painful. It's going to be hard. I'm not always going to know what to do or say. And so I just would love for you to speak to that because you deal with people who are going through hard things all the time. I think, especially for a pastor's wife, it's a situation that you know you can – you can't dip in and out. You're going to be in it with them. And not always consistently. But I just would love for you to help us to know, how can we as pastors' wives enter into suffering with people? I mean, you've talked about being present with them like Job's friends. But what are some things that we need to know or we need to hold as we as we enter into suffering with people around us in our churches?
That's a great question. And I'll say you are not the only one who feels the pressure, right? And oftentimes there's a pressure to say the right things or do the right things that we don't always know. Things are complex. But I think we first need to figure out, what is our role here, right? Am I coming in and this person is in crisis mode, or am I coming in and this person is in grief mode? And there's a difference, right? Mm-hmm. When we come in with somebody who's in crisis mode, oftentimes we're coming in as a problem solver. How are we practically meeting basic needs? How are we making sure they're safe? Those sorts of things. But more often than not, we're coming in that grief mode. And that's where you're talking about that burden is really, really heavy. And it is normal and natural to want to shy away from that because we know what we're going to get when we walk into that. Mm-hmm. And it's not something that we, you know, seek out for fun, right? Is that grief and that suffering. First, though, I would give us a reminder, we don't carry that burden alone. And I think if we go into this situation thinking, I've got to bear the burden by myself, something's a little off with our theology, right? We're not mm-hmm. understanding who God is working through us, that He ultimately carries those burdens, but we also have others in the church that help carry the burdens. It's not just one person coming in and sitting. So that should alleviate some of that pressure, that we acknowledge our role, whether it's crisis mode or grief mode, but our role as far as carrying that burden. But secondly, there's a level at which we think that if we don't carry that burden fully, or we set it down, or we enter into that suffering mode for a minute and then we step away from it, that somehow we're not loving them fully, if that makes sense. That,
yes.
That we need to be all present all the time for it to really be loving them well. And that's simply not true. Most of us who are counselors would not last very long at all if that were the case.
Right.
We have to be able to set things down, and that's not an indication that we love them any less. What that is recognizing that we can't carry everyone's burdens, that we still have to function as well. And so I love Paul's imagery of carrying one another's burdens with them. The way I explain that in my counseling classes is I think about a person carrying a 50-pound sack of rice on their shoulder. That's burdensome. I come along them for a season, shoulder to shoulder with them, and I carry some of that. But I'm not carrying it to continue carrying it. I'm carrying it so that we take it to the right place to lay it down at the Lord's feet, right? And so there's this sense of I'm coming alongside of someone, but it's temporary and it's purposeful and it's moving towards the direction of setting it down to the one who has the answers. So I think when we enter it with that perspective and this level at which I'm not the only one doing that lightens our load a little bit, or at least gives us some capacity to carry it better, knowing that we don't have to be all present all the time and that we can still love them and love them well. I'm going to add an aside here too, though. I think it's really important for ministry wives or women who are walking into these situations often, right? So think about the 50-pound sack of rice. If I'm doing that with 10 different people, I'm carrying 250 pounds, right?
Yeah.
Half of that. Self-care matters. And so recognizing for us as we minister to other people, if we are in this season of carrying lots of burdens, our own or others, self-care is not indulgence. Self-care is care. And so giving ourselves space to rest, to step away, to do things that are life-giving, to have other people that we take our burdens to and they carry with us, those are all good things that we do on purpose to help other people. They're not indulgence and they're not laziness. And so the layer of self-care there, I think, is also really important.
Uh-huh. That's a good point. And I think I'd like to know more what you think about that, because I think most pastors' wives, they do feel that once they're in something, they have to be all in all the time. It's really hard to know how to take a break or how to step back. And sometimes even bringing other people in, it may not be appropriate depending right. upon the situation. And so we do tend to carry it all ourselves and feel guilty when we need to say no or step back. And so can you speak to that? How can we have good boundaries in place? How do we know when it's time to step back or to do something that does require more of us at that time?
Right. That's a phenomenal question. And it's one that oftentimes we have to wrestle with for each individual circumstance.
Yeah.
About what's going on in our own lives versus the needs or the demands, quote unquote, that are there for us. But you said a really important word in there too, and that's boundaries. And sometimes we think that boundaries are unloving or unkind, right? When we have to set up some sort of barrier to say, I can go this far and no further. But we tend to, the other word you used was guilt, right? We tend to place that guilt on ourselves, even when it's not really appropriate there. But it's such a complex dynamic because we want to love people well and care for them well. But we can't care for them well if we're overextended, right? Mm-hmm. So there's some level of evaluation of what can I feasibly bring to this situation that's helpful, while also still being able to come to this situation and be helpful. Again, it's somewhat subjective based on the situation, but I think there's this level at which we need to free ourselves from expectations. And sometimes it's our perceived expectations, not even real ones, right? But stepping into the role of a pastor's wife, we do think, hey, we need to be pastor part two or that sort of thing. And people function that way. But is that appropriate? And if it's not, then we need to evaluate, is that guilt that I'm feeling, is that legitimate? Is that appropriate? And if not, I have a choice in how I respond to that. And I have a choice of what boundaries I put up for the good of myself, for my family, for our church. What boundaries can I set up? And who else can I bring onto this care team that is appropriate or might be helpful to share this burden amongst ourselves? We can do that if it's appropriate. Mm-hmm. All the while, Christine, I think we have to recognize this world is broken. And sometimes things feel really overwhelming. And sometimes we really don't have an answer.
Yeah.
Not that we want that, but that just is sometimes. Mm-hmm. And we have to recognize because of the brokenness, because of sin, we can't be all things to all people all the time. We don't always have a good answer for them. We don't always know where that boundary is. But we can rest that our God is present in the midst of it, mm-hmm. That he is sovereign and he is good. Going back to the who God is component and what's our role in that, thinking through that.
And going back to the self-awareness.
Yes.
Of knowing, okay, sometimes I want to be needed more than is appropriate, or there's something for me in being the one who comes along and saves the day or has the answer or meets the need. And I think that's a part of our growth in self-awareness, is saying, I can't meet all of these needs, and to try to do it is to try to be Christ to people. I love what John the Baptist says, I'm not the Christ. There is a Christ, but I am not him. I am the one who shines the light on him and will point you to him, but it's up to you to go to him for salvation, not to come to me. And I think that's been an important growth process for me in being a pastor's wife, is realizing that sometimes my desire to meet a need is more about me than it is about the person that I'm
absolutely
trying to meet. And as far as the care team goes, you keep mentioning that, and I think that's such a good point to bring in other people and to share the load with other people. I've done that recently in a situation with a woman in our church who had friends that she had shared with too. And so we started communicating and saying, okay, I can't do something this week, but can you do this? Can you help with her kids? Can you meet this need? And just knowing that we could even go to one another and say, I'm feeling tired. I'm feeling weary. I don't know what to do. And to have other people kind of being on the same page has been really helpful. And so I think that's a good point that you are mentioning. that we can do as pastor's wives. One of the things also that I think happens for pastor's wives is because that we are a safe person within the church, or at least we hope that we are and we try to be, is that sometimes people can become dependent upon us or on our counsel, or they may enjoy the attention that we give them, but they're not really ever implementing the counsel that we give. So how do you suggest that we navigate those types of situations with women in our church?
Yes, and they are real. That's a great question. So when I think about that question, though, where my mind goes is with our kiddos, right? I mentioned I have littles pulling at me, so that's my season of life. But I know that with my children, sometimes they're really slow growers, really slow maturers. And what do I do with them? I am patient with them, Lord willing, patient, and I'm mindful of the pace at which they grow is different from my own. Their maturity is different from mine. Sometimes that's because of willful disobedience on their part, but sometimes it's just their capacity. In those moments, that's just their capacity. And so I ask the question, how can I be faithful? What does it mean to be faithful in this situation with my child, or with, in this example, the slow mover at the church? I think we should just try to be patient and be present and continue there, knowing that slow and steady wins the race. And sometimes we may say things over and over and over and over. And yet, when I'm thinking about this parallel as well with my children, I want to recognize that oftentimes the Lord is doing a tremendous work that I just can't see yet. And so maybe it is that the Lord is working in that woman's life in a way that isn't obvious, it isn't outward, it isn't able to be articulated in those moments, but I know that the Lord works in ways that we don't see. And I want to trust that. I want to trust the Lord and His Spirit to be the agents of change and not demand that they change at the pace that I prescribe for them. Mm-hmm. Now, again, I started with patience. That requires a great deal of patience. But I think that's the right approach, because if we're asking the question, what do I have to do to be faithful? That's not contingent on their growth. It's contingent on my actions towards them. How loving am I towards them? Patient towards them? Now, I'm sure maybe in the back of their mind, someone hearing this is saying, yeah, but I've got this really, 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 really slow mover. There may come a point at some time that we say, okay, help me understand. Why does it seem like there isn't any progress? Why do you think you're still where you are? Not a, why aren't you listening to what I'm saying? But help me understand your evaluation of where you're at. What needs to change? Because this doesn't seem to be working from my perspective. I would argue that's further down the line than we want it to be sometimes. And so just like we would be patient with our children and trust the Lord's working in their lives, I think we should have a healthy dose of that as well with maybe our slower movers.
Because so much of our faith grows too in being in close interaction with people who are growing, and what we learn from that grows us too. In other words, the patience, the length. Over many years of ministry, I've learned exactly what you said, that it doesn't always go according to how I want it to go. And in that, I learn how God works, and I learn patience and faith, and I learn about myself, and that there are, you know, sometimes there's some sinful desires or intention in my heart. And so I love God's plan for discipleship, that we rub up against people, and it's not just for them. It's also for us. The growth and the sanctification is, and He is our counselor. The Holy Spirit is our counselor, convicting and growing us. And I just love that. So where is the line where we need to know as pastors' wives, okay, we're beyond our capacity here. We need to bring in, or we need to send this person to someone else, whether it's a doctor, it's a police officer, or it's ministry staff, or it's a professional counselor. How do we know when we need to hand someone off?
Yeah, great question. I think if there's any sort of suicidal thoughts, self-harm, abuse that's happening, that's an easy big category. We get other people involved. We hand them off as it's appropriate to law enforcement, medical professionals, those sorts of things. When in doubt, across the board, loop others in if it's possible.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm a huge proponent of a care team. So if it is possible, loop someone else in, get some feedback from someone else.
That's good. If women are listening and they're interested in growing in these types of skills, I mean, we're just scratching the surface of some tools we can put in our tool belt. And if pastors' wives are listening and they really want to learn more and grow, are there some lay resources that you would recommend that they could pick up or they could find online?
Absolutely. And there's a whole spectrum of things. I'll touch on each of them. But first, I'm a nerd. I love to read. So
I do too.
It's just God's gift to us. There are some great books out there on counseling women by ladies like Elise Fitzpatrick. Has a multitude of books out. Darby Strickland has some great stuff. Julie Lowe and Amy Baker have books out there. I recently wrote a book on counseling women. All of those have some great nuggets to dive a little bit deeper, but all of their writing is, it's not academic or philosophical. It's easily readable by lay folks. So I would recommend those folks. Going a little bit further down the spectrum, it might be that they check out resources from counseling organizations like the Biblical Counseling Coalition or CCEF or the Journal of Biblical Counseling. Those are articles or blogs that might be helpful as well. If they're really into getting trained, they might do something like a certification program. The Association for Biblical Counselors has a certification program. You might find a certification program through one of our seminaries. Southeastern has one. Some of our sister seminaries have them. But they're meant for lay people who want to counsel, but who want to counsel with some knowledge.
Yeah,
they're not just jumping in, right? But to train them, it kind of gives the 30,000 foot views of who are people, what are their problems, how do we fix problems, but from a biblical perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the tangible counseling skills or interventions that we might use with different things. And then I mentioned I'm a nerd. You could always come and get a degree. Several of our seminaries have fantastic counseling degrees, from certificates to bachelor's, master's, and doctorates. So that whole spectrum. Now, some of your hearers might be thinking, I can't go back to school. I don't even have time necessarily to read a whole book. I get it. I hear that. One of the best ways that you can learn how to help other people is to watch people counsel.
Yes.
So if there's a pastor in the church or another woman that has been doing counseling for a long time, if one of your listeners says, hey, I want to grow in this, ask if you can sit in on their counseling sessions and just watch, listen and learn and observe, and then talk with that counselor afterwards to say, hey, why did you do what you did there? Why did you ask that question? I noticed your face did such and such. Teach me, help me to learn. That kind of relational, observational learning is a fantastic resource that we don't often think about, but I know that I've learned the most by watching other people counsel mm-hmm. and by doing it myself. But those are that's lots of ways to answer that question.
Well, I love that last. I mean, I love all of them, but that last one is something everybody could do, and not just maybe not even a counseling situation, but just an older pastor's wife could say, "Could I go along with you when you meet?" Have a meeting with somebody who asked to meet with you to share something and see how they do that, because just experience teaches you a lot. And watching them would be helpful. And plus you get a mentor relationship out of it. So that could be a way to do that as well. Kristen, thank you for joining me. This has been so helpful.
Good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I've enjoyed learning myself and tucking away a few little tidbits. I mean, we can always be learning. And I think that's the point of why I wanted to not just talk to you about basics of counseling, but to say we need resources as ministry wives. We want to be equipped for the things that God has called us to do. And so thank you for giving us that a little bit of a equipping today in counseling. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
Thanks so much for listening to the Ministry Wives Podcast, a production of the North American Mission Board. If you found this content helpful, please subscribe, rate, and review us on your podcast platform or share it with a friend. You can find this podcast and other helpful resources at ministrywivespodcast.com.